handle the truth.
The Denise Simon Experience. The Truth Matrix. Vetting, exposing, drilling down to the truth.
Rolling Thunder, this is Hitman, see you at over.
Hitman, this is Rolling Thunder, see you at out.
The Denise Simon Experience. Exposing politics, lies, demagoguery, spin, fraud.
Grid to suppress, Mike Charlie, 435-921. Grid to mark, Mike Charlie, 473-989, out.
Promoting individual situational awareness. Question, probe, notice, ask why.
Mark smoke on the deck, two rounds AGBT.
And now, the Denise Simon Experience.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Denise Simon Experience. I have the real pleasure of having Naomi Wolf with us. Naomi, she's becoming her own Scud missile here in a good way. she is the founder and CEO of Legisector, and this is an online tool. And I looked at this, and all I want to do is stomp my feet and jump up and down and go yippee skippy. I mean, to compile this platform had to be a major and continue to be a major Herculean task. But Scud missile, Naomi Wolf, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me back. I appreciate it. Thank you.
I see a movement here, and I'm not sure how big it is. I hope it gets bigger when it comes to people being informed. And some ways I think they get informed for the wrong reasons. They get informed because they're mad or because they've been damaged in some form or fashion, whether it's criminally or financially or whatever, and then they start looking for some real truths. But you have created a tool, Legisector, that is really kind of helping them out. And it seems to me that there was probably a burr under your saddle that you felt compelled to build this site, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So I just jump right on in and explain what the site is and what led me to build it. Thank you. So yeah, I was in a former life a political consultant to Vice President Gore's election campaign for president in 2000 and to President Clinton's reelection campaign. And I also was the wife at that time of a White House speechwriter. And, you know, before your audience turns off the dial, I just want to say I'm an independent now. I walked away from both parties. I can no longer align with what the Democrats are doing, for sure. But that said, in that kind of close contact with how governance works in the center of it all, I saw that people, voters, were really deliberately left out of the process of finding out what was in bills. And not only that, but investors and homeowners and healthcare users were left out of the process. And that was intentional. So from that time, I determined to build a platform that would give everyone full access to every state and federal bill and to be able to affect it. So now we've launched Legisector. We launched an earlier version called BillCamp, but this is like miles and miles beyond. It's revolutionary. And Google is already suppressing it. It's that revolutionary. So you have to, enter. I know, seriously, already. So you have to enter www.legisector.com. But what you'll see is that any state or federal bill is presented there in a custom portal for you by your field or interest or industry. And you can find any state or federal bill. You can see the top trending bills. And not only that, you can share them through social media and you can tweet the bill sponsor, tweet the rep, you know, your rep, so that you can advance good bills that help you and stop bad bills that hurt you. And people, you know, just for customer, like for citizens, what's on the homepage is amazing. It's free. But for like investors and everyone who owns anything in a brokerage account as an investor, right? Or anyone who owns gold or anyone who has any savings, for homeowners, for people who use the healthcare system, there's a kind of a pro account where you get literally minute by minute bills changing in your custom portal so that you can be ahead of whatever is coming down the road at you and take action on it. So it is mind-blowing. The last thing I will say is, you know, as I mentioned, a lot of bills are written to conceal what's in them. I mean, billions of dollars can be transferred with a clause, right? So a lot of bills are gigantic, like 600 pages, and legislators are given like 48 hours to absorb them before they vote. Or they're written in language that no one can understand, and the summaries are really impossible to glean anything from. So usually I hate AI, but this is just an incredible use of it. You can press a button called explain on any of our of the bills in Legisector, and you'll get a concise, accurate, unbiased summary of what is actually in the bill. So it's just a game changer.
Well, it is a game changer. I mean, I'm looking at your tabs of the industries, agriculture, alcoholic beverages, energy, defense, law enforcement, finance, environment, healthcare, housing, immigration, infrastructure, international. I mean, it just covers the entire gamut. Good God, Naomi, I mean, what you've done here is a service beyond anything that I've seen. And I look at these, you know, these bills that have been introduced and where they are in the system, you know, if they've gone into committee, come out of committee, and you look at the description, and it has nothing to do with what's actually in the text of the bill. And so, you know, people are so desperate. And those that have just kind of given up and thrown their arms up in the air, this is the tool that they actually need, correct?
Absolutely. And I'm, you know, I'm thrilled at your response, because other people whose job is to find what the bills are that, you know, people in Congress or in state assemblies are talking about, like you, journalists and news organizations, struggle in exactly the way you've described. I mean, we all as journalists have hunted around, like, where is the border bill? Where is the appropriations bill? What's the last version? Have they changed the name? Impossible, right? And so that's why very often you'll read a lot of legacy media about a bill, but not even see the bill linked, because no one's sure what the latest version is. Mm-hmm. So this is incredible, because this is real time. You know, it's changing moment by moment. And if you click on any of those bills, like a border bill, you can see exactly through a timeline, where is it? Is it just being drafted? Has it left the committee? Has it moved into the House? Has it moved into the Senate? Same thing with the assembly or, you know, your state legislature. And by the way, people should know that it doesn't take a lot of voters to really influence outcomes at the state level. So if you live in Arizona, you can select bills just for Arizona. If your issue is healthcare in Arizona, you can select bills just for healthcare in Arizona. So never again will they be able to keep you from understanding exactly what's going on. And then you in your position, you know, you have the power to say to people, hey, there's a bill to defund the WHO, or there's a bill to, you know, close the border. You can post that on your, you know, radio show or on your podcast under the description of this show, and or whatever the show is that you're doing about the issue. And then you can ask your listeners to send that bill around, right? Send it to their representative, send it to the bill sponsor, share it through their social networks. And you can stop, you know, we have so much history of stopping bad bills and launching good bills. And by the way, the things people tend to do with legislation when they can really see it, and you can tell this from the homepage, and I encourage everyone to look on the homepage, the top trending bills tend to be not partisan, right? It's so interesting. The top trending bills are like, what do people care about beyond labels and beyond the horse race? What do people actually care about? You know, if they've had a vaccine injury, they want to be able to sue so they can get money to take care of their loved ones. If they, you know, want healthcare to have clearer labeling so they don't have hidden fees, that'll come to the top. You know, like if they want, you know, common sense academics in schools instead of like sex education that is off the rails, they want that. So it's quite beautiful, because when you give the American people, like, this is a totally nonpartisan tool, but I feel very inspired looking at the homepage of Legisector every day, because what populates at the top is what's most engaged with. It's what people find and share the most. So what people find and share the most really is the best legislation. It's not. not what it, it's really not what the RNC or the DNC wants us to focus on. It's what actually would serve us.
You know, for instance, under energy, there's Save Our Gas Stoves Act.
Right. Cool.
So, for instance, on that one, is it getting an on your side? Does it get a new title, or is that the actual title of the bill or the legislation?
Well, all bills have like an HB or SB at the federal level, and then a number. So I would have to take a look at that bill, and you can click on a link and see the text as a PDF.
Right.
It probably has an HB or an SB, but that's the, you know, I'm really glad you asked that question, because a lot of bills will have a name like Don't Say Gay Act, right? And it's the opposite of what's actually in the bill, and it's very misleading to people. The Don't Say Gay bill is super famous. All my friends who are liberals are horrified with DeSantis because they think he wanted to pass a bill in Florida in which teachers could not say the word gay. But in fact, if you click on the bill, it doesn't say that anywhere. It's about a completely different thing, just focusing on academics, basically. So that, you know, you raise a great question, like Save Our Gas Stoves. Click on the bill and press the explain button. You'll find out if it actually phases out gas stoves, right? Because they're trying to mislead us. But this tool makes that impossible.
Well, and that's the beauty of what's here. And ladies and gentlemen, I mean, I'm looking at this, and I encourage you to do that at legissector.com. This is the biggest public service I think I've ever seen.
Aww.
I mean,
can I quote you?
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes,
write
please.
It down.
Right.
No, it's amazing. Thank you.
Well, I mean, 3D printed Gun Safety Act of 2023, assault weapons ban. You know, the word assault.
Right.
The person assaults, not the gun.
Right.
American Dream and Promise Act of 2019, which is, you know, under immigration. American Dream and Promise Act. You know, I mean.
Oh, well, you know that's about immigration, right? You know, what
course.
Is that going to have in it, right? Exactly.
And so if you click on that, it's fascinating. Of, you know, there's important words in all of these bills. And the word is shall, which means they are to do those things. And very often, that just kind of gets ignored too, does it not?
I mean, yes, but this is so fantastic because, you know, let's talk about what happened to us in 2021, right? Everywhere there were mandates. There were mandates that you couldn't go into a store if you weren't vaccinated. Mm-hmm. There were mandates that you had to lose your job. Well, what is a mandate? A mandate is not a law. It's not a law. It doesn't have any weight of law, and people didn't know this, so they just complied. But if you had had this tool in 2021, you could have looked up, you know, vaccine legislation, New York State, where I live, where I was being kept out of all these businesses because I'm not vaccinated, and you would have seen that, in fact, there is no law preventing me from walking in to, to the places that were telling me there was a mandate that you had to be masked, for instance. That didn't exist as a law. So that's in cities. It existed on transportation federally until a lawsuit ended that. But that's the kind of thing that empowers you. And let me just give you some other use cases. Like once you start playing with this tool, like you, right, it's just so captivating. It's like, oh my God, look at this. Let me give you two more use cases. I spent 12 years as a very, very, very broke single mother. And I had almost no money to invest. But I looked at an early version of this tool that we had built called BuildCam. And I saw that all this money was going into the South Bronx to build beautiful walkways along the river and beautiful parks. And, you know, the South Bronx is a blighted area, as you know. But millions and millions of dollars were going into infrastructure. And you see right there, there's a whole section on infrastructure. So I'm not an idiot. And I took my tiny savings and bought a rental apartment in the South Bronx. And now it's, I can't tell you, I don't want to show off, but it was a very good move for a broke single mom to make. So anyone right now, like your home is your greatest asset for most people. what's going to happen? You know, if you look up mortgages or banking and finance, mm-hmm. you'll see, you know, bills coming down the road that can take your, for instance, your fixed rate mortgage and turn it into a balloon note mortgage, right? Well, you can stop that bill. Or you can look at, here's another example. I saw all these bills phasing out by law plastic bags. They were going to mandate paper or require paper bags.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like, huh. I was telling friends who had more money to invest, you've got to invest in paper products in New York State because that's going to be a boom industry. Sure enough, you know, everything is now paper and paper products are, you know, that was a good investment. I mean, they seem like kind of dumb examples in a way because they're not very poetic, but, you know, would you rather be in charge of your own investments and know what's going to happen to them or just hand them over to some banker or brokerage account who does not have your best interests at heart? And, you know, or some mortgage company, not keep an eye on that, right? Or find out, you know, not know what's going on in your own neighborhood. If there's a garbage dump coming to your neighborhood, you will know, you know, and you can take action to stop it from this tool. And the last use case I want to share with you is a friend of mine has some health issues in her family. And she is using, and no matter how good her health insurance is, it doesn't cover this issue. Pardon me. So she's using this tool to stay on top of influences on healthcare and to make sure that the bills that pass related to health insurance will cover her and her family.
Well, you know, ladies and gentlemen, please, you got to go do this site, legisector.com. I'm looking at something called Workforce and Senior Affordable Housing Act. Okay. But a huge thing that you've done here too, Naomi Wolf, is that not only have you given the number is there, the sections are there, the text is there, but if you keep scrolling down, you see the history, but the best thing is the sponsors of the bill. So you can
right?
see if they're all Democrats, there's their picture, where they're from, you can see if it's bipartisan, and you've mm-hmm. given the email address. So you
yep.
can go to your congressperson, you know, Congressman Reese out of South Carolina and go, dude, you're my rep and you know what have you done here kind of thing,
right?
So
exactly, and you can
you never have to leave the site. I mean, this site's addictive, Naomi.
I'm so glad you said that. It's unbelievable.
Yes,
every day, right? Oh, I'm so glad you're having this reaction. I mean, all of your listeners are going to have this reaction. It'll blow your mind. I mean, when you mentioned the new housing, workforce housing, you know, putting together the dots as a journalist, this tool is invaluable, as I mentioned. But also for news stories, there's all these, you know, 16 to 30 million undocumented immigrants, illegal immigrants who come in over the border.
Right.
And they're like, my parents were immigrants, my grandparents were immigrants. No one gave them housing, group housing. No
right.
one gave them barracks type housing. But all around America, including in a neighborhood where we visit a lot in Massachusetts, people are newcomers, quote unquote, illegal aliens are being grouped by the dozens and hundreds in like schools and facilities and college dorms and, you know, barracks, like barracks type housing. What is going on here? So my husband and his, who has a podcast called Unrestricted Invasion, and his colleague, JJ Carroll, a former border agent, are very concerned that it's a military operation. And that a lot of these people
mm-hmm.
are
mm-hmm.
soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great way to just at a stroke take over the United States from within. So this is very concerning. I'd want to look at that bill you just found because it sounds like, again, the title is not the bill, under the guise of, oh, workforce housing, we need more affordable
yeah,
housing
yeah.
for workers. They could literally build barracks type facilities to house this mercenary army, right? I don't know that that's in the bill, but it's like, when in America, which is not a communist country yet, did, you know, was there ever
yet
government mandated group housing for workers? That exists in some kind of socialist country, but we've never done that in the United States.
I'm looking at voting rights, ladies and gentlemen. She's got 10 items here. Create independent redistricting commissions, resolutions for proposing an amendment. I mean, these things, I guess all these books that I'm reading at the same time, I'm going to have to put aside and just This is where I'm going to live. I'm going to live on LegiSector.com. Doggone it.
I love it.
Well, I mean, we're talking about trade. We're talking about transportation. We're talking about voting rights. We're talking about housing, telecommunications, taxes. I mean, it's all here. Naomi, do you feel like there's a whole adrenaline rush when you get on the site every day?
Oh, it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming. But as overwhelming as it is, there's a big hurdle that we face. And that's why I'm so glad to have you as an advocate, hopefully, because literally, you can imagine, lobbying is a $6 billion industry. You don't need a lobbyist anymore. You don't need a lobbyist. You can be your own lobbyist, right? You know, spin doctors, PR, you don't need to get your information about bills from a publicist. Politicians themselves, you know, you won't believe them anymore when they lie to you. All that being said, this tool that you have on your computer, on your handheld right now, wipes out all those industries, right? Or radically, this tool does to legislation, lobbying, PR about bills, what like sites like Expedia did to travel agents and travel agents, right? You won't need them anymore. Point is, you know, I've already been canceled and hounded by the government, and the government already, you know, tried or organized with Twitter and Facebook to silence and censor me. It's very scary. Point is, we don't have a budget for marketing or advertising. So it's really up to, you know, you and the people listening to share this tool, ideally to subscribe to it. There's a free version right on site, but there's a comprehensive version that is $299 a month. Inside for, you know, companies, clinics, lawyers, researchers, universities, nonprofit organizations, you know, advocates, activists who have a budget for that. So it's really up to word of mouth to get people using this, because it's you and me. You know, Twitter's not going to take our ads. Facebook's not going to take our ads. And in any event, we're a shoestring startup. We don't have a budget for advertising and marketing. So I guess what I'm saying to people is, given how much opposition there is to this tool, please share it yourself. Use it and share it.
Well, you know, I'm looking at one that came through the 116th Congress, Life at Conception Act. Okay, now, that was in 2019, but that doesn't mean right. that it can't be reintroduced all the time. So, ladies and gentlemen, right. what Naomi is providing for you is that there's written legislation out there that, you know, has it's swirling in the halls of Congress. And then if you scroll down and you look at the sponsors, every one of them, I'm looking at every single one of them. Gosh, there must be 30 or 40 here. And all but two are Republicans. There's only there's two Democrats that have signed on to this. So you can see who your friends are. Life at Conception Act. Amazing work here. Just amazing.
Thank you. Now, you just said something. Can I jump in?
Sorry,
I don't want to stop raving about our product. But what you just said, something really important. Old bills can be introduced.
Yes.
You know, if there's interest. So if there's a fantastic bill that didn't make it through the last time, let me give you an example. We drafted and introduced a bill to compel, and it's on our website, Daily Cloud, it's a draft election integrity bill, to compel hand counting paper ballots, get rid of machines, voter ID, of course, no absentee ballots without proactive request, no ballot harvesting, it's fantastic. So in Maine, Representative Heidi Sampson introduced it, and it was defeated by a party line vote. Democrats defeated it. Point is, so many Democrats don't have any idea that Democrats are standing in the way of their own votes being counted. And a lot of Maine Democrats, if they knew, would rethink who they've elected as Democrats, right? And so they would want to go for those people who are supporting election integrity. So that's, I just wanted to reinforce that you said two important things.
Naomi Wolf, LegiSector.com, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to become your new Bible. You'll have to do it every morning with your coffee and orange juice. Naomi, well, thanks for this and good luck. Well done. Just well done. Ladies and gentlemen, there's more coming your way. Stay with us.
Mama, what does the chicken say?
Chicken. Oh, okay.
When the wolf?
Oh, a wolf. Ooh!
What about the tiny dog? Cat. Owl.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Dolphin? What does the turkey say? Whale.
Yeah, whale sound.
Do the giraffe.
Giraffe, really? Okay. Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hey there, ladies and gentlemen. We're so pleased that you stayed with us here on the Denise Simon Experience. Our former Marine and Army soldier, veteran, Jason Nelson, call sign Storm Chaser, has been kind enough to accept the invitation to join us once again. He is formerly, too, a congressional candidate in the 17th District of Texas. Maybe we can talk him into running again, although politics is its own blood sport. But Jason, welcome back. We're so pleased that you could carve out some time to be with us.
Denise, thank you for having me. And remember, politics is a bloodbath. We have to make that the word.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Sorry. I used the word torpedo earlier in another radio show.
How dare you say torpedo? That's a weapon of war.
I was talking about the UN, and I had to quickly correct myself. So I'm self-censoring.
Right. You just... Not a literal torpedo, folks. I mean a figurative right. torpedo. It's funny how we have to do that now. Yeah. And to note your first question, remember the reason I'm not running this time beyond obviously the trauma that happened last year and give my wife a bit of a break from the public eye. But primarily it's because I made a bunch of promises when I ran the first time. And I didn't say I promise if you elect me. I said I promise I'm going to do this. So I think a lot of people missed out on that part when they asked me again this cycle. And I said, well, I'm not done. And I'm closed, but I'm not done yet. And so since I'm not done, I can't run. That would be really dishonest, wouldn't it? And so I'm looking forward to running likely next cycle. I don't think there's really an option. So
I don't either. You know, I live in Florida, and the show is broadcast in South Georgia, so sometimes the weather that happens here in Florida finds its way to Georgia and then up the East Coast. And I say that because we're obviously a fairly sizable hurricane state. You know, we suffered badly last year on Hurricane Ian, and there's still an awful lot of recovery that's going on. But what's particularly fascinating is when you get on social media and, you know, there is a hurricane that's brewing and it's tropical storm this, and we start looking at the tracks and the models on where it's going to travel, people start prepping. And Florida is pretty good at this kind of thing. But the new residents, and we take in like a million a year, which is, we're full, ladies and gentlemen, we're full, pick another state, but setting that aside. Tips and tricks are always being asked. What should I do? Do I take the water out of my pool? You know, what do I do about windows? Where do I need to shelter to? What do I do with dog? You know, all these kinds of things. And we've got some people in Florida here that, as I said, are very good at what do they say? The best defense is a good offense. And we need to kind of be teaching, prepping, I think to more people than just those that may be, you know, in hurricane territory. We watch the weather to determine whether we need to take an umbrella with us every day or put on a sweater or a coat because of the temperature. So we all have a sense of prepping to ourselves. But also, too, because we have a lack of law and order across the country, you also have to prep yourself to be on guard and keep your environment keen in your eyesight. Is that right, Jason?
I think that's a very astute assessment of this, actually. One of the things you just said that's very interesting to me, you know, those million new residents that you guys get per annum, and you have to teach them, right? They're not familiar. And I find it very, the parallel here to me is, our grandparents and our great grandparents, depending on the age of the person we're talking to, what we consider prepping today, they considered getting ready for winter, right? It was just storing up food, basic necessities, things that you couldn't get
firewood.
And correct. It's so I think that prepping comes with this negative connotation of this idea of this guy like sitting in a bunker with, you know, 20 years of food and eating out of a can and reading the same comic book. But in reality, when because you're in a state that is, no pun intended, always in a state of flux sometimes, because you got hurricanes, you've got heat waves, you've got all sorts of so you have college students during spring break, so you have all sorts of natural disasters that come into Florida. And I think using your other example, you said that people, you know, they look at the weather and they prepare by getting an umbrella. I'm going to go one step further and say, you know, most people have insurance. And when you have insurance, let's say you have home insurance and your home is damaged, your idea isn't, so I had a 3-bedroom home with a veranda and a nice, you know, breakfast nook. And after insurance is done repairing your home, you come back and have a 1-bedroom, studio apartment. Mm-hmm. You would say, wait, what? That's not why I bought insurance. If you get a car, if you have a car, and you have, you know, like we do, 4 kids, and you have insurance. I have insurance specifically so that if our car is damaged, we get a like car to drive in the, you know, interim. Because if they turned around and gave us a Ford Fiesta or a Mazda Miata, you know, we would look at them and say, oh, that's insane. So I think it's funny when people think about, when you talk about prepping for a natural disaster or an unnatural disaster or anything that might happen to impact the supply chain or your ability to get access to food, water, and other basic necessities, I think we have to ask yourself, do you want to, again, try and pack into a Miata, or are you going to expect to have the same type, you know, are you going to have the same lifestyle? Do you want the same lifestyle, or do you want to suffer for weeks and weeks at a time? And that's the question, I think, the difference between those who prep and those who don't. So Florida is great at responding to natural disasters, about getting its supply chain back up and running. But compounded disasters, on top of the fact that there are still many people who live in outlying communities who take even longer to get access to those things. So when we talk about prepping, we're not talking about, again, the idea of a bunker per se. What we're talking about is the continuity in your life. How do you maintain a quality of life? And, you know, my answer is always to go to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not, but help us.
Maslow's hierarchies of needs refers to, essentially, it's a reverse pyramid where you talk about the basic necessities that you need and then so forth and so on in order to, as a first world person, maintain your sense of id and your survivability and other things. In other words, the very most primary thing you need is oxygen, right? If you don't have air, you can't live. So that's pretty straightforward. But where, what's next after that? Well, it's water, right? If you don't have water, you've got about 3 to 5 days to live. So what do people have to get water? Now, we know if there's a hurricane and you live on the coast, it's likely that salt water will have flooded out most clean water sources. You're going to have difficulties in the aquifer. So how much water do you have stored up? But more importantly, what do you have to filter water? Do you even know how much water you and your family or the people you're responsible for actually use every day? And that's like a basic concept. And then you go from water to, well, what's the next thing you need? You need food. The average American has 2 weeks worth of food in their home. If you remove refrigeration and freezers from that equation, which is what happens when the power goes out, you're down to about 5 days of food. Your storehouses in your regional areas carry about 2 weeks worth of food. So assuming that people don't make a run on the grocery store and they're responsible, you're talking about 2 weeks. Now, they have generators, but again, you don't have power. So again, you have 5 days to 2 weeks worth of food total available to you. And I always have people ask me, because, you know, at prepperbeef.com, where we have our company, they say, how much food should we get? And my answer is always, it's morbid, but it's true. How long do you want to live? Right. So when you think about your food, and then you start going up that list, shelter, which includes your clothing, and medicines, you know, I have people say, like, I don't know how old you are, and I'm not going to ask because I'm a gentleman, but I'm 45. And having spent 20 years in the military, my body's as broken as you can get, and I am on at least one medication that I take in order to maintain a quality of life. I don't know if it keeps me alive, but it definitely maintains a quality of life for me. But there are many Americans, millions upon millions of Americans, who are on medications that they need to sustain themselves to live, or are on medications that improve their quality of life that if they were to suddenly stop taking it, would have a deleterious effect on their health.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have 60 to 90 days worth of those medicines in stock and storage and available to you, the answer is you don't have it. That's it. You don't have medication. So if you don't have X amount of food, you don't have food. If you don't have an ability to filter water, you really don't have water. And when you think in concepts of that, when you think of, that concept in that way, using Maslow's hierarchy of needs, I think people start to understand where they're lacking. And then you have to go, obviously, it's regional and there's very different sets of rules you would use to set people up and say, how can I be successful and how can I be self-sufficient? And I preach self-sufficiency because, you know, if there's aid available, you should take it if you're not taking it from someone else who needs it. And I mean, like, if your local government is handing out water, you should go get it because, you know, why not add to your own ability? If they say we have X amount of water and it's limited, then you should obviously, as a responsible citizen, if you can filter your own water, should say, hey, I'll let someone else have that. But using the resources that are available, you got to remember those are going to run out. And eventually, it's going to be the federal government that's sending it down. And if we've learned anything during COVID, there are strings attached to that aid, in some instances, syringes. But you get my point. With everything, there comes a string attached. And so the idea is the more self-sufficient or community sufficient that you can become. And that's in Maslow's hierarchy of needs, by the way, is building that community. And that has a different shape and form for everyone. But the point I'm making is the more self-sufficient you are, the more you are able to, no pun intended, weather the storm that is going to come forward. And again, it's very easy to use hurricanes in your region, but we all know there are many other things that can impact your local area, as well as the national or regional supply chains that would impact you at a local level.
Well, supply chain was huge. We ran out of all kinds of things during all things COVID. And I think in some cases, the recovery has been long and hard. Back in 2012, there was a piece of legislation that was introduced, Jason, and it was H.R. 762. Now, this is in 2012. And what it was, a piece of legislation, and we hate to use the word militia because somebody's going to come knock on our doors if we use that word, but it was almost as though it was a community civil defense. And I bring this up because there was a book written by Michael Mabee, Prepping for a Suburban or Rural Community. And it's not a very, it's a paperback book. It's, you know, maybe 160 pages. And what it is basically doing is going down the list for people to understand all the things that you just said: medical, security, communications, sanitation, food, water, power, raising funds, and, you know, teaching people to have these skills to prep for any eventuality. And it doesn't have to be government. It can be just a community situation here. I feel like that this bill, which is very old, that never really went anywhere, at this time, because of inflation and because of where we are with lack of law and order, with riots and protests and so forth is going on, and certainly because of weather, we need to have these discussions again. There used to be a lot of reality TV shows about prepping, and a lot of people made fun of other people for doing these kinds of things. But the truth of the matter is that a lot of people that watch those shows were paying attention, and we need to force multiply. I think it's long overdue. What say you?
I couldn't agree more. I think that, you know, one of the interesting things about, again, it's a connotation, right? So it's become very, and this is not a good thing, this is very Orwellian, but our language has become very fluid, right? Mm-hmm. So they joked about with the bloodbath comment, but, you know, even the word vaccine doesn't mean the same thing anymore, right? Quite literally. And when you start looking at how newspeak works, and you think about how they're changing, you know, just the terminology. Prepper is gone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Prepper has gone from being this to be prepared, just being a person. Let's say it differently. If you were going to go hiking and you were going to go on let's say you were going to do a real hike. Okay, you were going to do a good section of the Appalachian Trail. Okay, you were going to go out with, let's say, five friends, four friends, there's five of you, right? It's a good sized group. And you guys are going to go hiking, and you're going to go out for, 12 days, okay? Aside from your own personal assessment of what you bring to the table, if you were creating the party, what would you do? Who would you put in that group with you? And I'm assuming you're going to answer, so I'm going to speak for you and me and everybody else and say, you're going to choose people with who are physically healthy, who are capable of making the hike, who bring, you know, their own supplies. But on top of that, you're probably going to think ahead and you're going to say, gosh, this friend used to be in the military and knows how to read maps. This person was an Eagle Scout and knows how to forage and
build a fire.
Also do some first. Right, build a fire. I mean, I know that's a ridiculous, I'm being obviously using extreme examples, but you're not going to go out with four other accountants who've all of you have never done this in your life and go hiking, traipsing off into the woods. Mm-hmm. You're just not going to do it if you did. Now, there are people that do that. And sadly, we read those stories, right? But I think that any person with any level of common sense and intelligence is going to stop and say, I need skills around me. I need the right things. That's the community I need to build, right? I think we need to start thinking that same way, but I want to say it less in a picking your community and building it sort of way, and more as a as an introspection. So as you just pointed out, there are all these shows they used to have, and they used to, I mean, but canning used to be normal. You know, it wasn't weird to be somebody who knew how
but
to
But your own
can.
Supply now chain. It's a miniature supply chain that you've built for yourself.
Yes, and beyond that, there's so much that we could get into about that, just that concept of canning. I'm not even going to touch it. I just want to touch on the idea that saying, if you went into a party and told people, and they said, oh, what are you doing this weekend? And you said, oh, I'm going to be canning all weekend. People are going to go back to the other groups of people and say, that's the weirdo. And I don't know why that is. Now, maybe not so much now, because there are going to be a lot more people who've heard about it who are going to start saying, oh, why do you can? What do you can? But there was a long period of time where that was just, that would be a weirdo thought, right? So I'm going to wrap this all up into one point, I promise. But when you think about the way they've changed the language, when you think about the fact that they've pushed on people this idea of being less and less self-sufficient, of almost, you know, your time is better spent watching TikTok videos than it might be learning an actual skill. You'd be better off reading pulp books than you would reading about how you can make your own wood pulp. I could go on forever, but you get my point. It's this idea of where did we start to redirect our time and efforts and stop becoming self-sufficient? I think the result of technology and of other advancements and this idea of it's available at the click of a button. These things are, so why do I need to? I mean, if I were to suddenly find myself unemployed or unemployable, or in my case, you know, if everything just fell to pot, I think I would just go become a handyman in the D.C. area. You know, there are guys who get paid $250 an hour to change light bulbs for lawyers because they don't know how to change their own light bulbs.
Yeah, check the oil in the car.
Exactly. So I mean, really, truly, I was stationed in D.C. as my last, just outside Baltimore, at my last duty station. And while I was there, I was told stories from tow truck drivers who they call them milk runs. They would go and pick up these fancy cars on a flatbed and take them to go get their service, their annual service. Like, that's what these people couldn't even be bothered to take a car somewhere. So my point is that I feel like this has almost been on purpose, that society has been pushed in this direction so that we are pretty much useless. And that builds this reliance on the government, which in turn gives more power to the government. The only way to reclaim that power is for people to start becoming self-sufficient and for them to stop looking at this idea of prepping as being a weird thing and start thinking of it more as being the type of American that built this country in the first place.
Well, we've gotten to be lazy and we've gotten to be disposable. You weren't going to ask my age, but I'm old. And I asked myself the other day, and then I asked my older son, the question, son, when did you become your mother? And then I asked myself, because I asked myself the same question earlier in the day, when did I become my parents? And I worked hard at not being so disposable and relying on others that I don't know for my lifestyle, to maintain a lifestyle or to get through a situation. We all have the ability to be self-reliant. And if we can't, we have the ability to learn those skills. And, you know, I was having a discussion yesterday with my husband about Joanna Fabrics that had just filed for bankruptcy. And it was very sad to me because people don't sew. Women don't sew anymore. Something happens and they just throw it away and go buy it again someplace else. They don't knit, they don't build, they don't make, they don't create. We just go buy it, and we buy it from some third world country that doesn't like us very much, and the quality is so bad that we have to at some point throw it away and buy it again and again and again. So self-reliance is just huge, and you can teach an old dog new tricks. If you need some help, you can always find a mentor. You can always find a carpenter that can teach you some kind of a trick with woodworking or power tools, or somebody can tell you where the dipstick is in the car so you can check your own oil and actually put oil in the car. All these things are out there that we can have an immediate fix and don't have to call a service person who's going to be 6 months out before he can get to your house to fix your gutter when you could have done it yourself. Correct? Did I kind of sum it up right?
I think you summed that up perfectly. I think that the whole point of, there's a lot of pride involved. A lot of people don't want to admit to other people that they have a deficiency, if you will, that they lack knowledge in a certain area. Becoming, you said teaching an old dog new tricks. Yeah, it's incremental, right? They're not puppies. You can't just teach them and say, and they go, oh, that's the way it's supposed to be. For us, we've found as our family, it's incremental change. It's when we buy gifts for our children, we make the decision to look at not only where they're made, but what it's made of, the parts. Mm-hmm. And that sounds ridiculous, but wooden toys are better than plastic toys in many instances. You're talking about toy cars, that sort of thing. And we just, when we talk about every facet of what we do, like our company, we had to find oxygen absorbers made in the United States. We had to find Mylar bags made in the United States. You know how hard that is? And it's more expensive. And you have to eat that cost. Well, it's the same as being a consumer. You have to make decisions for durability. You have to make decisions to think, what is the impact of my purchases and how we can sit here and be self-sustainable, but also encourage the idea of others, make it a marketplace practice that other people will then be able to afford to do and will also follow in your footsteps.
Well, I think you end up necessarily helping out your community too. If you've learned or have a skill either that you learned or you come by naturally, you're all too easy to go help somebody else in the same situation. That's the neighborly thing. That's the friendly thing. That's the community thing. And that includes prepping. And again, prepping, I think, should really have a kind of a different definition, which means self-reliant, and teach self-reliance to others. Kids, they don't like the adulting thing, because they're beginning to learn what adulting is all about. And once they figure some of these things out, they're mentally then prepared for the next hardship that comes along, and then it's not so hard. And did I say that right?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, look, this is what the healthcare, socialized healthcare system became so overburdened that they were forced to create a scheme in which young people were forced to buy health insurance or pay a tax penalty. In other words, young people don't buy health insurance mostly because the majority of them don't need it, right? The reason they can't afford it is because they aren't buying it. And the reason they aren't buying it is because the majority of people between the ages of 20 and 30 do not need health insurance.
Right.
They are by definition in the fittest poor. Now, I'm not saying there aren't lots of people who are sick or blah, 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 but most of it is just bad habits. But the point I'm making is that is not the generation that's thinking about the future. But that is ironically the generation that drives pop culture. Which means that, as you pointed out, the whole prepping mindset, self-sufficiency, if they're driving pop culture and they don't care, then how do we get them to care? It's kind of a weird conundrum.
Jason Nelson, thanks for this conversation. I think what we're doing is we're saying here, become self-reliant. And whatever your deficiencies are, you're not too old to learn some new skills. I'm old, as I said, and I've learned some interesting new skills here recently. Jason Nelson, thanks for your service, and thanks for having a conversation about being your own supply chain and being self-reliant. Well done. Ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate that you spend some time with us. We'll see you again very soon.
The Conversation Starter. This is Talk 92.1 WDDQ 8L Valdosta.